motivation. Of course it could be. Even smushed between Makani and the love seat's arm, Darby managed to tuck his thumbs under his suspenders.
Okay, let's pretend your theory is correct, and David was trying to punish you. What about the other victims? What did they do?
They were probably assholes, too, Makani said. I mean, look at Matt. Ollie frowned.
Some of his friends are worse.
Yeah, but Matt was their leader. He set the example, and his friends followed. What about Rodrigo and Haley? Alex asked.
I don't know, McConney said, but none of you knew what I did. Everyone has secrets.
She couldn't help glancing at Ollie, but he was distracted, so he didn't notice.
I don't know about Haley, he said, but I do know something about Rodrigo.
McConney felt Alex's spine straighten beside her.
It feels wrong to speak ill of the dead, but one of his friends gave the police a tip, which they checked out, and it was true. Rodrigo was a troll.
Darby frowned.
What kind? Like a comments troll?
The kind who threatened women, Ali said. Makani's stomach dropped.
Dozens of platforms, he continued, hundreds of aliases, mainly against women in gaming. He stopped doing it a few months ago. The friend said Rodrigo realized it was wrong, but he wasn't sure what had happened to trigger his conscience.
Alex twitched sharply. This new information appeared to upset her more than Makani's confession. So, I'm right. Makani pressed her clenched fists against her forehead. Suddenly, everyone was taking her theory a lot more seriously. Darby tugged on his suspenders. Their elasticity wouldn't last long under this much stress.
I don't know if you're right, exactly, but there is a strong pattern, and there could be something unknown about Haley. So, who else would David have on his list? Ollie asked.
But that's the thing, Makani said. We don't know. Whatever they did, it's probably a secret.
Unless, he sagged with fatigue, I mean, Zachary Loop, right?
The waiting room fell into a hush. This was the closest Makani had heard to Ollie admitting that he'd known the rumors about him and Zachary. He sighed.
Look, I know one of us was supposed to be the killer, and maybe I am a loner, but he's definitely an asshole. It's reasonable to assume that he'd be a target.
Oh my God, Alex said. She didn't need to think about it.
We have to warn him, Darby said. Instant agreement. We can't take the chance.
Ollie called his brother. Chris sounded doubtful, but he promised to check in with Zachary. A minute later, a text arrived. It was the owner of Greeley's Foods. Your shift has been canceled. Store closing early so employees can attend the memorial.
Shit! Alex sprang from the love seat. I'm supposed to be in the band room in 5 minutes.
Makani's fear reignited at the thought of anyone leaving her sightline. What? Why? You can't go on campus. Alex tried to allay Makani's concern with a reassuring smile. It didn't work.
We're playing the memorial. They're just letting us in to pick up our uniforms.
Don't worry, Darby said, as he hustled Alex away, car keys already in hand. I'll drop her off, and then we'll both be safe in the crowd.
When Makani and Ollie returned to Grandma Young's room, her bed was gone. The nurses informed them that she'd been wheeled away for a test. They sat on the floor and picked at the cold food that Ollie had brought earlier from the cafeteria. Now that they were alone, Makani wanted to talk more about her past. She wanted to be comforted, but Ollie was deep in contemplation about something else. The moment didn't seem right. The vibration was faint, but they sat up like a shotgun blast.
It's Chris, Ollie said, checking his phone.
Makani stood and walked to the mirror above the sink to give him the privacy of a few feet. Futzing with her shirt, she peeked at Ali's reflection. His pale brows were pinched, which matched the frustrated tone of his conversation. The call was short.
"The police can't do much," he said. "They don't want to freak anyone out. But Chris did check in with Zachary, and he's safe. He's at home with his mom's boyfriend."
"So, that's it?" Ali's jawline was rigid.
"Yep."
"I thought they might send a patrol car to watch over him or something."
"Maybe if they were a bigger department, or if we had any shred of proof. But they're stretched thin, and now they have to work the memorial. Chris is already there."
Makani slumped. "I'll let Darby and Alex know." Darby's response was immediate.
"But we just saw him."
Her breath caught. "Z's at the memorial?"
"Yeah, we saw him walking toward Main Street. There are a ton of people here. I just dropped off Alex, so I'll find him to make sure he understands how serious this is."
"Don't! What if David is stalking him? We'll help you. We'll be right there." Ali read the texts over her shoulder.
"What about your grandma?"
Makani stopped halfway to the door. She'd vowed to be more honest with her grandmother. What possible excuse could she give for leaving the hospital right now?
"We'll leave a message with the nurses," he said, decoding her troubled expression. "We'll say that we wanted to pay our respects, that we'll meet up with my brother, and that we'll be back as soon as it's over. None of that is a lie."
It wasn't a lie, but it didn't feel good. Chapter 21. Zachary Loop was stoned. He'd only come to the memorial because it was better than being at home. Better than being alone with his mother's lecherous boyfriend. Zachary saw the hatred burning in Terry's eyes whenever Amber wasn't looking. What kind of man was jealous over his girlfriend's son? What kind of man felt threatened by that relationship? Zachary prayed that Amber had the sense not to marry Terry. Zachary's first stepfather had been bad enough. He was beating the shit out of some other family now. Black satin ribbons were tied around every telephone pole on Main Street, and they fluttered in the crisp bite of the wind. The marching band was warming up in the grocery store parking lot. Brass instruments hummed and bass drums boomed. Cops were patrolling the two-lane street, which had been blocked off from traffic. The quaint thoroughfare was packed with county locals, vibrating with fury and injustice, as well as every news media outlet that had raced to Nebraska to chronicle it. The memorial was supposed to be a dignified remembrance of the victims, but even Zachary could see that wasn't exactly what was happening. From the makeshift stage, a flatbed truck parked in front of the old bank, Principal Stanton shouted declarations to the masses.
"This spring, the school fountain will be turned into a monument for the victims."
Cheers.
"This weekend, our drama department will hold a fundraiser for the victims' families."
Cheers.
"And tomorrow night, our football team will take to the field in the playoffs."
Losing their goddamn minds, cheers. The principal was a balding man with a sturdy frame, who wore his masculinity as if it were a badge of honor. Zachary detested him. Stanton was a son of a dick who punished Zachary for every fight, even the ones started by other students. Today the principal sounded more defiant than respectful, and the spectators sounded more aggressive than supportive. The whole town was seething with outrage as their fear reached its boiling point. Which came first? The outrage or the fear? Miss Clearwater, his favorite counselor, liked to give him Zen koans to keep his mind engaged. But koans were paradoxical riddles, which meant this wasn't actually a good example. Zachary knew from experience that fear always came first. He drifted through the agitated flock. Every conversation was about David. A middle-aged woman spoke loudly to whoever was listening.
Did you see that picture where he was posing with that buck carcass?
Creepy smile, a guy with meth mouth said. Gave me the willies. His family goes to my church, a conspiratorial male voice said. The dad always seemed real shady. The mom's a prude, too. Never looks happy.
Zachary stopped wandering when he reached the fringes. He felt more comfortable on the outside of any crowd. Leaning against the brick storefront of Dream's Bridal, the outmoded boutique across from Greeley's Foods, he checked his messages to see if his friends were coming to watch the circus. Damn. Drew and his brother were headed to an out-of-town wrestling match, and Brittany's mom had quarantined her until David was behind bars. David Thurston Ware was born 2 days after Zachary. Zachary had been held back in eighth grade, so he was still only a junior, but they'd spent enough time together that he knew David wasn't what he seemed. Osborne was raring to cast ominous insights onto his character today, but just last night they'd been confused. I can't believe it, they'd said. He seemed like such a normal teenage boy. Years ago, Zachary and David had lived next door to each other. Like most children who happened to be neighbors, that also made them friends. They watched cartoons, played Legos, went dirt biking. Zachary remembered David as a quiet kid, prone to sudden outbursts. Unlike Zachary, who yelled at and threatened and terrorized the younger neighborhood boys, David held in his anger until he couldn't anymore. Until he snapped. Admittedly, Zachary was no role model, but he still didn't think holding it in was healthy. He'd never forget the day when he'd borrowed David's new bike without asking, something he'd done a dozen times before, and David flew into the street and shoved him to the ground. The fall broke Zachary's arm, but that wasn't what had scared him. It was the unbridled rage on David's face. At the time, Zachary shook it off. Fair was fair. But deep down, it unsettled him that David had appeared from seemingly out of nowhere. He must have been hiding in the bushes. He'd been waiting. But geography had been stronger than their friendship. When Zachary's mom remarried, his family moved into the trailer park, and things with David came to their natural end. The last time Zachary remembered talking to him was nearly 2 years ago, when they'd run into each other in the candy aisle of the drugstore. They'd debated the merits of chocolates versus gummies like they were kids again. A new text vibrated in Zachary's hand.
Busted. Erica saw you at the memorial. Get your ass home right now.
Not Drew. Not Brittany. Amber. Mom. Erica was Amber's co-worker at Curls and Cuts. She was only a few years older than him, and she was hot. Dark hair, sexy tattoo. Why had she ratted him out? Fuck that. Fuck them both. No way was he going home for some quality time with Terry. Amber picked the worst times to give a shit about him.
On the stage, Principal Stanton exited to make way for Pastor Greeley from Grace Lutheran, who introduced his son, Caleb. The Greeley family ran Osborne. The pastor's brother owned the grocery store and several of the buildings downtown. Their father founded the grocery store and had been mayor for a record number of terms. They were the opposite of Zachary's family, and Zachary resented them for it. Caleb was a senior like David, like Zachary was supposed to be. Caleb was round-eyed, square-faced, and as earnest as his khakis. But as he spoke about their classmates, it sounded like he hadn't really known them. He talked about Haley, Matt, and Rodrigo by using pull quotes that Zachary recognized from the news. Zachary grew irritated, and then bored. His gaze roamed until it settled on a very pretty girl. A very pretty girl who was heading straight toward him. Caleb Greeley hopped off the flatbed truck with as much dignity and respect for the dead as possible. He strolled to the edge of the crowd and then, as his father raised his hands to address them, sprinted down the side alleys to the grocery store's parking lot. Caleb played first trumpet. He didn't want to miss his second act. After the sermon, his father would lead the crowd in a prayer, and then the band would march everybody up from Main Street to the memorial of flowers and cards in front of the high school. Everyone would be holding a candle. A cable news program had donated them, though Caleb doubted the gesture was made out of goodwill. More likely, someone with a lot of money had recognized that it'd look better on television if the 1,000 crying marchers were also holding 1,000 lit candles. Caleb understood this, even if he didn't respect it. He was an overachiever, too. He'd been the youth leader for Grace Lutheran Church since he was 15, and the trumpet section leader for the OHS marching band since 16. Excelling in all his classes, he'd successfully campaigned to remove the word evolution from their textbooks, and he already had post-high school plans to do missionary work in Papua New Guinea. He would be the first Greeley to leave Nebraska in several generations. His belongings were on the loading dock behind the store, where he'd left them. He hurried into the bibbed trousers and jacket, freshly dry-cleaned, that pungent uniform smell impossible to erase, and slid into the padded shoes, slipped on the white gloves. Reaching for his hat, he realized it was missing its gold plume. Caleb grabbed his instrument and ran toward his section.
"Alex, have you seen my plume?"
Alex Shimerda's lip curled. "No one wants to see your plume, Caleb. Gross." His face grew red with embarrassment. He hated jokes like that. They made him uncomfortable.
"Has anyone seen my plume?"
The trumpeters who bothered to pay attention shrugged.
"Thanks for the help," Caleb muttered, jogging away.
"Ask the boosters," Alex called out.
But they hadn't seen it either. A mother with a bobbed mom hairdo scolded him.
"It wasn't in your hat box? You'll have to pay to replace that, you know."
"I had it earlier. I must have left it in the store."
Before the memorial, he'd been practicing his speech inside the employee break room.
"Better hurry," she said.
As he fumbled with the key to the back entrance, Alex dashed over to him.
"We're lining up. It's just a stupid plume. Don't worry about it."
"Have you seen how many television crews are out there?"
Alex looked startled, and then her disgust returned.
"Right. You wouldn't want to look bad on TV."
She shook her head as she stalked away.
"I didn't mean it like that."
The key rattled inside the lock, but it wouldn't twist.
Dang it.
Caleb didn't care how he looked. He didn't want the band to look bad as a whole. It would be awful if they appeared sloppy, like they didn't care about the victims, because they all cared. They cared about their classmates a lot. The key gave way, and Caleb burst through the door. Zachary stared at the candle in his hand. It had a paper ring to catch the wax drippings, and it looked like the type that his church brought out when they all sang Silent Night on Christmas Eve. Amber only took him to church on Christmas Eve and Easter. He preferred the Christmas service. The world seemed more at peace. Katie Kurtzman stood before him, talking about something. She'd given him the candle for the walk. He tried to concentrate, but he was high. And she was pretty. Katie was tall and graceful with long hair that shimmered and changed colors in the light. Right now, caught by the rays of the sun, it looked like copper. Pretty copper. She was different from the rest of the smart kids. Those other assholes acted like he was invisible, which was why he treated them like shit. Zachary made people look at him. But Katie was nice to everyone. And everyone liked her back. It's how she got to be student council president. He'd tried to be rude to her once, and she'd called him on it. He respected that.
"Oh, no!"
Katie dropped the cardboard box that held the candles. A man had spilled a blue slush on her arm. Zachary sniffed the air for the signature Sonic drink flavor. Blue coconut or blue raspberry. Indeterminable.
Sorry!
The man was in his mid-20s and wore tortoiseshell eyeglasses. Oh my God, I'm so sorry! Katie's cheeks flushed as she wiped the ice from her blouse.
It's okay.
The man tried to help her brush it off, but his touch made her wince, and he immediately backed off, looking even more chagrined. Raspberry. For some reason, that was the wrong flavor. Zachary inhaled deeply and widened his chest, and he was already a big guy.
What the fuck, glasses? Why don't you watch where you're going?
I was looking for my cousin in the band and...
Really? Katie said. It's okay.
He should have to pay for your shirt, Zachary said.
The man went for his wallet, but Katie stopped him.
There's no need. These things happen.
When Zachary puffed up again, she added,
I'm fine, Zach.
His father called him Zach. His real father. Zachary didn't let anyone else call him that. But with her coppery hair and leggy tallness, yes. Zachary was tall and broad and fat. His ex-stepfather used to tease him about his weight. The bastard had known what he was doing. He'd known those jokes hurt boys as much as girls. Zachary had tried to deflect them, but the snide comments had landed anyway. He was perfectly aware that his thoughts were both corrupted and misguided. But tall girls made him feel like the right size. They made him feel like less of a freak. His chest deflated. He let her Zach slide. The man with the glasses scurried away into the crowd. Katie sighed.
I should go.
Right, gotta hand out the rest of those candles.
But when Zachary peered into her cardboard box, it was empty. She smiled.
You are my last stop. I just need to get home. My mom's leaving for work, and I have to watch my brother and sister.
Do you need a ride?
Nah,
she said it lightly, but she hugged the box against her chest. His question had made her uncomfortable.
I live nearby. I walked here.
How old are your brother and sister?
Zachary had to keep the conversation going, if only to prove he wasn't that guy. He wasn't a threat.
They're twins. Six. Do you have any siblings?
Nah,
he said, echoing her earlier nah. Katie smiled again, but this time it was tinged with something else. Sadness, perhaps. At least it wasn't pity.
Stay safe, okay? Find someone here to hang out with.
As she walked away, he changed his mind. It had been pity.
Fuck you, he said, louder than his normal voice.
Katie stopped. She looked over her shoulder and met his stare.
I don't think you mean that.
And then she vanished in the crowd. Maybe he'd been wrong about her. Maybe he was just an asshole. Zachary shoved the candle into his pocket. He leaned against the bridal shop and closed his eyes. His head swam. A drum began to beat, and his eyes popped back open. Paranoid that he was about to see David, that David was about to attack Katie, when he caught a flash of camouflage in a window across the street.
Oh, shit. Shit!
He glanced wildly around, but she was gone. He knew she was gone. He was really, really stoned. After all, he'd stolen Terry's good shit. He closed his eyes again, opened them, stared hard at the grocery store's dark windows. Nothing. There was nothing there. Caleb retraced his path to the dusty break room, but the plume wasn't there. The stupid feathery pipe cleaner wasn't anywhere. Had he missed it outside in his panic? Wherever it had fallen, it no longer mattered. The drum cadence had begun.
The sharp rap of the snare reverberated off the thin walls of the empty store. The band was on the move. As Caleb rushed into the back room, his face warmed with premature humiliation. Arriving late, not properly dressed, footage broadcast around the entire country capturing my incompetence for all to see. Stop it, he forced himself. This isn't about you. He hurried past the cardboard boxes and reached the exit, and then, suddenly, it was exactly about him.
Zachary! Zachary! Zachary!
People were shouting his name, and an instant later, before he could figure out who or where or why, three figures bombarded him, buzzing with suppressed energy. His eyes widened before narrowing again, lazily, suspiciously. Makani Young, Ollie Larson, and Darby. He just went by Darby now, he remembered. They were anxious and expecting something from him.
What?
He said, not politely.
You shouldn't be here. Makani's face was partially concealed by the hood of her hoodie. You shouldn't be standing by yourself.
He couldn't remember the new girl ever speaking to him before. When she'd transferred here last year, she'd seemed sullen and hurt, and her hips moved through the halls with a fuck-you energy that had intrigued him. He thought maybe she'd find her way to his group of friends, but she'd made Darby and Alex a trio instead. Zachary pulled out his smokes and put a cigarette between his lips.
"Didn't you talk to my brother?"
Ollie asked.
"Your brother, the cop?"
"He's the only brother I have." Zachary lit the cigarette. He took a long drag.
"No."
The three friends exchanged worried looks.
"Chris said he spoke to you," Ollie said. "He told me he called your house." "Maybe he called my house, but we sure as hell didn't talk. He probably talked to Terry."
Ollie frowned.
"Who's Terry?" "My mom's boyfriend."
The shittiness of this person was implied in his tone.
"What did you do to your hair?"
"Dyed it," Ollie said with a straight face. Ollie was good at that, at being expressionless. Zachary couldn't hide his emotions if his life depended on it.
"I know that. Why?"
"Literally nothing could matter less right now," Makani said. Ollie's mouth twitched unexpectedly with a smile, something she'd said.
"You two," Zachary said, gesturing between them, "are fucking."
Makani flinched. Ollie's smile went cold.
"Point, Zachary, and that's what you get for disturbing my solitude."
"You know," Darby said, "if you weren't maybe about to be killed, we'd walk away right now." Zachary raised his eyebrows.
"Fighting words."
A few feet away stood a large family with several children. The dad glared at Zachary over his shoulder. They hadn't realized that the crowd had stopped talking to watch the band file down the street. But then an odd thing happened. The dad saw Makani and did a double take. He nudged his wife and whispered into her ear. Zachary gave him the finger. The dad turned away quickly, but then he glanced at them again, and Zachary had the craziest feeling that a murmur was traveling through the crowd. Makani stepped closer. She was so focused on Zachary that it seemed like her eyes were avoiding someone else. "That dad? Listen," she said quietly. "We have reason to believe that you're David's next victim."
"Not likely," Zachary said. "Me and David go way back."
She looked surprised, until she registered the smidge of doubt that he was unable to mask, and then her friends were pressing up against him too, hissing about some lunatic theory that David was murdering everyone who'd been a bully. Zachary stomped out his cigarette to push them away.
"Well, if that's true, it won't be much longer until David kills himself. Problem's gonna sort itself out."
Makani grimaced. And he remembered.
It explained why all these people were staring at them. It explained why the murmur was becoming a small furor.
Oh, shit.
Zachary finally lowered his voice.
You were the one attacked last night.
Her eyes widened with annoyance.
So, wait. If your theory is correct, that makes you an asshole, too.
He paused for a fiendish grin.
What'd you do, young?
It doesn't matter. Makani rolled up her left sleeve. A bandage was wrapped around her arm as high up as he could see. All you need to know is that I earned this. Her friends tried to protest, but she interrupted them. We're worried for your safety. This Terry guy doesn't sound great, but can you trust him? When this is over, can you go home and stay with him?
No,
Zachary said to the first question. He stared at her forearm, which she'd already covered back up.
But yeah, I can stay with him.
Good, she said. Zachary didn't like the catch of fear in his chest. He side-eyed Ollie. Their classmates were always comparing them, lumping them together.
What about you? You've done some shit.
Yeah, Ollie said, but the only person I've ever hurt is myself.
And your brother?
Ollie flinched, not so stone-faced after all. Makani glanced at him as if she were trying to figure something out.
2 points, Zachary. In the movies, it's always the kids who have sex and do drugs that are killed, right?
Zachary forced another grin.
I guess that means we're both gonna die.
You aren't supposed to be here. It was the first coherent thought that Caleb could complete. The hooded figure was blocking the exit. In one hand, he held a plume. In the other, a knife.
Where should I be?
David asked. His dull monotone matched his colorless appearance. The emptiness of humanity shook Caleb to the bones. He took a trembling step backward.
In the fields, or in somebody's barn.
David took a measured step forward.
I'm not. How did you get in here?
Why would I answer that? David let go of the plume. What if you escaped? The band started to play, but something about the music was strange and off-putting. They stopped bickering. Zachary frowned.
What is that? Why do I know that song?
Darby looked stunned.
It's the graduation song, Pomp and Circumstance.
Jesus, Makani said, as Ollie said, Christ.
I guess they didn't have a go-to funeral dirge in their repertoire, Darby said.
Zachary listened to the swell of rising pageantry. With each refrain, the march grew more disturbing.
You know, this is the only time this song will ever be played for them. This is so messed up, Darby said.
This is gonna get old, Ollie said. This might be worse than if they hadn't played at all, Makani said. The crowd progressed forward. It felt like everyone was staring at them, waiting to see if Makani would join in. She seemed resigned by her despair, like she didn't have a choice anymore. Even though there was still an hour before dusk, the townspeople lit their candles. Zachary wasn't sure why they didn't wait until they reached the memorial. In the afternoon light, their flames looked weak and silly. Makani, Ollie, and Darby removed candles from their pockets.
Coming?
Darby asked. Zachary pulled out his lighter and candle.
What the hell?
He uncrumpled the candle's flimsy paper ring. He lit his wick first before touching it to Makani's. It blackened, and then it sparked into flame. Caleb tore out of the back room and into the store, knocking over glass jars, towers of canned goods, and racks of cheap clothing printed with the words Lion Pride. David dodged the mounting chaos with alarming ease. Caleb shot past the produce, battering down a carefully constructed pyramid of butternut squash,
but David still reached him just before the entrance. David stabbed him in the back, ripped the knife downward. Caleb screamed, but no one could hear him over the sound of the band. He flattened against the cold floor. The drum line was poised in front of the doors, the last in line and the last to march away. Caleb pounded on the glass, stamping it with bloody fist prints. David dragged him out of view.
"What are you going to do?"
Caleb was crying. Haley's throat, Matt's brain, Rodrigo's ears.
"What are you going to do to me?"
David straddled Caleb's body and stared down at him. He didn't smile. He didn't scowl. He just finished his work while the people of Osborne marched to the school in their parade. Chapter 22. Makani and Ali walked back to Main Street. If the mood weren't so subdued, it might have even been called a stroll. The sun was setting, the candles had melted, and the memorial was over. Zachary had been escorted to his car, and Darby had been dropped off with Alex. They were meeting back up with Chris. Their brief time alone was dwindling to an end, and they were trying to make it last. Makani didn't feel like Ali was judging her, or even looking at her askance. But there was something new, faint but solid, wedged between them. They didn't hold hands. Their hands were tucked back into their pockets, unsure again. As they turned onto Main Street, only a few short blocks away from Greeley's, where Ollie's and Chris's cars were both parked, she spoke out of last-ditch desperation. "Thanks for listening earlier, in the hospital. And for not judging me." She paused. "You aren't judging me, are you?" Her directness loosened him up. He shook his head with a smile. "No." The road had been reopened, and a tailgating stream of cars and trucks were heading home in both directions. Compelled to keep filling the space between her and Ali, Makani kept talking. "It's just, I never thought I could be that type of person. But I am." Unexpectedly, her voice cracked like a mirror. Before the incident, she hadn't believed that she could be capable of cruelty. Now she knew that she was. Ali stopped. His expression was serious. He waited to speak until she stopped, too.
"Everybody has at least one moment they deeply regret, but that one moment, it doesn't define all of you."
"But it does. It ruined my life, and I deserved for it to be ruined."
"Makani. Makani."
Ali repeated it because she was walking away from him. She halted, kept her back to him.
"I'm not trying to absolve you from your sins," he said, "but the person I know, she's a good friend and a good granddaughter."
Makani crossed her arms, her uninjured arm pressed against her bandage, and she winced and uncrossed them. "I don't know. I'd like to think I'm a better person now, but for the rest of my life, I'll always have this question in my mind. I'll always have doubt. Something could trigger me, and I might snap or freak out again."
"Well, I know that our regrets change us, and that's how we grow. For either better or worse. And it seems to me, you're growing better."
Makani wasn't sure what to make of this.
"Hey."
He gave her a small smile.
"I'm still here, right?"
"Well, yeah, but..." She cut herself off. This smile twisted into a knowing smirk.
But I'm a fuck up too."
Makani looked away quickly. He shrugged, like it didn't matter, but he wasn't looking at her either. "I'm sorry," she said.
"It's fine."
He started moving again.
"It's not like this town can keep a secret."
She frowned, stayed put.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I disagree.
Ali glanced back over his shoulder, a disbelieving eyebrow raised in her direction, but her expression made him falter.
I mean, I've heard rumors, she said, but not even real rumors, like rumors of rumors. And I have no idea what's true and what's not, so I assume most of it is not.
He grimaced. Some of it's true.
I wish you'd tell me.
There. Another confession. Now that she'd started, she couldn't stop. Ali's gaze fell to the sidewalk, and the hard exterior cracked, revealing some of the damage underneath.
I've wanted to say something even more since you told us about what you've been through, but I didn't want it to seem like I was comparing my situation to yours, or like I thought mine was worse, or even equal. But I don't mean to not talk about it, and I know everybody talks about me anyway.
I'd like to hear your version of the story, Makani said, whatever it is.
Ali nodded, accepting her confidence. He gestured toward a neon sign behind them at the opposite end of Main Street from Greeley's.
You know the red spot?
She did. It was technically a greasy burger joint, but its regulars used it as a bar, and if you weren't a regular, you didn't go. The rumor was that you could buy anything there, as long as you were looking for illegal drugs or sex workers.
After my parents died, it messed me up for a few years. When I turned 16 and got my license, I started hanging out down there. I should have driven somewhere better, somewhere out of town. But there was this girl who worked there. Dark hair, bleeding heart tattoo, you know, those little pink flowers. Only these were actually dripping blood. I kind of had a thing for her.
Makani felt a sharp pang of jealousy.
Everybody there knew who I was. They felt sorry for me, so most of them left me alone. I was like their depressed kid brother. It took weeks of relentless flirting, but I finally got her attention.
How old was she?
23.
Not as old as the rumors, but way too old for someone who was barely 16.
I guess she pitied me too.
It seemed to hurt him to admit it.
We hung out at her trailer sometimes and got high.
What happened?
Makani asked.
They started walking again. Dried leaves crunched under their shoes.
Chris found out that we were sleeping together. He was furious. He wanted to arrest her. But words were exchanged first.
In his pause, Makani understood that Ali's fight with his brother was still too raw to be spoken aloud.
It was just this whole big, stupid mess. He was still trying to figure out how to be a parent, and I was... I'm not sure what I was trying to figure out.
Did he arrest her?
No,
Ali said.
But I'm guessing you didn't see her anymore.
He forbade me from seeing her, which wouldn't have worked, except it wasn't necessary. I think Erica was embarrassed.
Ali turned his face away from hers.
She didn't want anything to do with me after that.
Erica.
The name pierced Makani's heart.
Does she still live here?
Yep. Comes into Greeley's a couple times a month. She's married now, cuts hair. We don't speak, he added.
There was something in his tone.
You liked her a lot, didn't you?
I thought I loved her. I was an idiot, but that's what I thought.
The sadness expanded inside her, enough for the both of them.
A few days later, I reached the genius and original conclusion that life was shit. I drank 240s and waded into the river. I was going to kill myself.
Makani sucked in her breath.
She'd been severely depressed, but she'd never been suicidal. It was upsetting to learn that Ollie had stood so close to the edge.
"I stumbled and fell," he said, "and as I was flailing in the water, realizing that I didn't want to die, the manager of Sonic drove past. By some miracle, the guy saw me. He pulled over and dragged me out. The river was only a few feet deep. I was just scared and wasted."
Ollie gave a regretful laugh.
"It's probably the real reason I hate Sonic. Reminds me of my dumbass self."
An old pain distorted within Makani as she pictured Jasmine vanishing, also scared and wasted, into a different body of water. The situations were so different, yet eerily similar. She didn't have the strength to let her thoughts linger there.
"Well, it makes me like Sonic more. I'm glad he saw you. I'm glad you're still here."
Ollie bit his lip ring.
"I'm glad you're still here, too."
Recalling a rumor associated with the river, Makani blurted,
"Were you naked?"
He glanced at her with surprise.
"What? Do people say that?"
She nodded guiltily.
"No," he said. "In that particular brush with death, I had my clothes on."
It was so tragic and absurd that it made them both laugh.
"I can't believe that happened," she said.
Ollie shook his head in amazement.
"I know."
"You are naked."
"I know."
Her smile grew and then faded. "What happened after the guy rescued you?"
"I wasn't arrested, thank you, nepotism, but I spent some time in a psychiatric unit. After that, Chris sent me to a therapist in Norfolk. But by then, I wanted help. I stopped drinking and doing shit."
He gave a loose shrug.
"And that's it."
"Is that what Zachary meant when he said you'd hurt your brother?" The lightness disappeared from his voice.
"Yes."
Makani was relieved that nothing worse had happened, and Ollie hadn't even done anything truly awful. Most of the disappointment was inside his own head. She could tell that for Ollie, having worried his brother was the worst thing he could have done. Instead of pressing him, she backtracked.
"When you said you got high..."
"Weed."
"You never did any harder drugs? Pills or opioids or anything?"
He shook his head. "And you never sold them?" Ollie sighed.
"Cool, you heard that one too."
He shook his head again.
"The only thing I've ever sold is produce."
"Did you sleep with anyone else? Please say no."
"Only in my dreams," he said. "Only you."
It was cheesy, definitely a line, but Makani didn't mind right now. She smiled at him as they stood in front of Greeley's.
"Hey, Ollie," she asked softly.
"Yeah."
"You know how you said that I'm a good granddaughter and friend?"
He smiled back.
"Yeah."
"Do you think I could be a good girlfriend?"
Ollie's hands reached for hers through the dusk. Their fingertips touched and the street lights flickered on behind them.
"I think you're already a good girlfriend."
They kissed while they waited for Chris. It felt absurd, kissing in public, kissing after a memorial, kissing when they'd been so close to being actual subjects of the memorial. It also felt euphoric, rapturous, and profound. Ollie's nose was cold, but his arms were warm as they slipped around her back. It was the thrill of summer, revived, making out beside the grocery store when they shouldn't be doing it, except infinitely better because the questions between them had been answered. Their lips parted to catch their breath. Makani laughed, glancing aside. And that's when she noticed the blood. Red handprints, beaten fists, dragged fingers, the fine lines of the skin that had touched the glass
were shockingly clear and shockingly human. Makani stiffened with fright. Ali followed her gaze and they startled apart. They stared at the bottom left side of the store's automatic entry doors. The blood was on the inside. Their limbs reached for each other again, clinging as they frantically checked their surroundings. Except for the cars, the parking lot was empty. The traffic had unclogged, and only a few people remained on foot. None of them were close by. None of them were Chris or any other officer, and none of them appeared to be David. Makani's heart raced. Ali cupped his hands to peer inside the dark store while she kept her eyes on the street.
"Is he in there?" she asked.
"I think somebody was dragged toward the checkout lanes, but I can't see them."
"Oh, God."
She ripped his phone from his pocket, bouncing anxiously on the balls of her feet.
"I'm calling your brother."
"The whole place is ransacked."
"Shit! What's your password?"
9999.
"What? Why would you do that? Somebody could guess that."
"You didn't," he said. "Shit! Something just moved."
Makani lurched against the door. He pointed toward a shadowy area, a pile of she couldn't tell what.
"I think there's someone there," he said. "Someone on top of that."
It was impossible to tell, but there was definitely something that might be a person. Chris's number rang emptily in her ear. The shadows shifted again and Makani gasped. Before she realized what he was doing, Ali unlocked the door. As a longtime and trusted employee, he had a key.
"Someone's still alive," he said.
The overhead sensor picked them up. The doors whooshed open. They rushed inside and then staggered backward, stunned by the true destruction. Overturned vegetables, boxes, cartons, bags, and cans were everywhere. An abundance of food splattered like congealing fireworks across the linoleum. Ali yanked her aside so they wouldn't track through the blood, the streaks of a body hauled across the floor. They ran toward the shadows and then crashed into a halt. Makani clamped her hands over her mouth to mute her scream. In front of the checkout registers was a permanent display of merchandise whose profits helped support the football team, something Makani had once found incredibly strange, but she'd slowly grown used to. Now that she knew Osborne, it made sense. But tonight, it had been razed to the ground. And in the center of the debris of jumbled sweatshirts and flags and tchotchkes was Caleb Greeley. The boy lay atop the heap like another item of garish memorabilia. His feet and knees were splayed outward. His face was on its side, and a swollen tongue protruded out from between his front teeth. The chest and stomach had been mutilated. Long incisions slashed through his blood-drenched band uniform, but despite the clothing, the unnatural splaying of his limbs made him look more like one of those realistic sex dolls than a human being. It was his body's complete and utter lack of dignity. But that still wasn't the worst part. The worst part was the hands. Caleb's fingers had been laced together, and then his hands had been severed. They rested over his heart in prayer position. Red gore and white bone. But if Caleb was dead, someone else was the moving shadow. Makani and Ali backed into the cereal aisle, each placing a protective arm across the other person's chest. They pressed against the yellow corn pops and green apple jacks. Their hearts slammed against their rib cages. The air was sharp, acidic. It stung their nostrils and watered their eyes. Caleb must have been chased down the condiment aisle, won over. The vinegary fumes from the smashed jars of pickles and olives were ghastly. Makani covered her nose. She was still holding Ollie's phone, and Chris was shouting at them through the speaker. The metallic thud of a push bar echoed throughout the building. Their hearts stopped, and then a heavy door settled closed. Makani whispered into the phone, "David Ware just went out the back exit." Chapter 23. The can of tuna fish had been bothering her all week. Katie Kurtzman had discovered it last Friday as she was moving a load of whites from the washing machine into the dryer. The flat can was eye level and sitting on the sill of the basement's only window. The long, narrow window was closed, but its latch didn't work. It was just big enough for a slender body to squeeze through. The tuna had been cheap, a discount brand. The lid's edges were sharp and crude, as if the tin had been cut with the hand-cranked opener, not the electric one that they had in the kitchen. The can was empty, but it was still damp inside. That's how she'd noticed it. The faint underpinning of fish underneath the cloud of bleach and detergent. She'd asked the twins, but they claimed not to know anything about it. She didn't think they were lying. They were afraid of the basement, so they never played there. Her mother didn't know about it either. She supposed that it had fallen down from one of the ceiling beams, a trash relic left behind from the previous homeowners. But that didn't make sense to Katie. The can was far from its stamped expiration date, and they'd been in this house for 5 years now. Plus, there was the dampness and the smell. Katie knew she was being paranoid. She hadn't known any of the victims, not really. She'd never had any personal connections to them, and she'd only ever been friendly to David. Still, as she applied stain stick to her sleeve, where the blue drink had spilled, she eyed the window ledge. She couldn't shake the feeling that someone had been here, sitting on top of the dryer, listening to her family upstairs, eating tuna fish. She undid the first few buttons of her blouse, but then, thoroughly spooked, decided against it. She could wash the shirt tomorrow. Hurrying toward the planks that served as stairs, Katie glanced over her shoulder for one last look. She stopped. A quart of latex paint sat on the floor beside her mother's old treadmill. She picked it up and placed it on the ledge against the window, and then she felt foolish. How could that protect her from an intruder? But she was scared enough to leave it. Perhaps it would be the magic charm that warded off the evil spirit. Upstairs, Lee and Clark were spread out on the living room carpet reading comics. Lee noticed her first.
"What's for dinner?" "What's for dinner?"
Clark parroted. Katie hurried past them toward their shared bathroom on the second floor. Her arm felt gross and sticky, and her cramps were getting bad again.
"Mac and cheese." "With hot dogs?"
the twins asked. "Only in Lee's half," she said, and the twins cheered. Clark hated hot dogs. He also hated hamburgers and pizza. For a child, his eating habits were baffling. As Katie bolted up the stairs, her mom thumped down them. She worked the 12-hour night shift at the hospital, 3 days on, 4 days off. She was currently on, without the option to take off any shifts to watch over her children. The staff was doing mandatory training in preparation, anticipation, of further attacks.
"Do you have everything you need? What happened to your shirt?"
"I'm fine. We're fine," Katie said. "Keep your phone in your hand. Don't open the door for anybody."
"I know, Mom."
"I love you," she called out.
"Love you, too."
Katie didn't look back as she said it. Her mom kissed the twins goodbye as Katie grabbed a clean T-shirt and pajama pants and locked herself in the bathroom. She removed her blouse to scrub her arm with a warm washcloth and Sesame Street branded soap, and then she swallowed an Advil and peed. Leaning over to grab a new tampon from under the sink, Katie startled. All the toiletries were in the wrong place. The tampons and extra rolls of toilet paper were out of reach and had been rearranged entirely with her makeup caddy, flat iron, and hair products in the back of the cabinet and the twins' old bath toys in the front.
Katie's first thought was scary and irrational. David. She'd heard a rumor at the memorial that he liked to mess with his victims.